whiskey. Whiskey is the thing. It makes you feel so frisky. It makes you laugh and sing. So let's all have a keely and have a lot of fun. Let's drink to good old whiskey. There's a draught for everyone. Now whiskey is the devil, so some people say. But that's a lot of nonsense, for we're all here today. No evil thoughts among us, just out to have some play. So drink your good old whiskey and we'll chase our cares away. It's the Scottish whiskey, whiskey is the thing. It makes you feel so frisky, it makes you laugh and sing. So let's all have a keely and have a lot of fun. Let's drink to good old whiskey, there's a dram for everyone. Wherever Scotsmen gather, no matter where they roam, they love to get together and sing the songs of home. The mountain glens and valleys, the rivers flowing free, and always while they're singing, they've a dram or two or three. Here's to Scottish whiskey, whiskey is the thing. It makes you feel so frisky, it makes you laugh and sing. So let's all have a keely and have a lot of fun. Let's drink to good old whiskey, there's a dram for everyone. Marching o'er the heather or strolling through the glen, you'll always hear the tourists say, here I be back again. But it isn't just the scenery or the days of auld lang syne. It's whiskey, good old whiskey, that makes our land so fine. Here's to Scottish whiskey, whiskey is the thing. It makes you feel so frisky, it makes you laugh and sing. So let's all have a kitty and have a lot of fun. Let's drink to good old whiskey, there's a dram for everyone. Let's drink to good old whiskey, there's a dram.
All right, there's a bunch of us here. We got engineer number two sitting over there just raring to go. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. It's good to be here. I got my outside chores done early, and so before it got too hot, but good to be here.
Black Dog is here.
Hi.
He likes this hot weather.
I do. I like hot.
Yeah, you're not quite right. That, whatever. Whatever floats your boat. Isn't that right, Flathead?
That's right. He comes from a different part of the world. He has a different outlook on life.
I don't know how he stayed in Chicago with all that cold weather and all of his life. I don't know how he...
I don't either.
He likes hot weather, so I don't know how he stayed up there.
That's why I'm down here.
Yeah, but it took you all your life to do it.
I had to convince my wife.
Engineer number one.
Well, I'm recovering.
You what?
Yeah, I'm recovering.
Oh, recovering.
From out this morning. I got out there and did my work early, and it lasted a little longer than I hoped, and all of a sudden I wilted.
Yeah.
And between my heart rate and not being able to get my breath, I'm still just trying to recover.
That wears you out. That's rough.
I'll probably be recovered in the morning sometime.
Yeah, get a good night's rest. Yeah, you'll right. Be all right. All right, Tory will be here in a little while. He's out playing golf, so he's going to be a little bit late. But he'll be here. All right, we'll be right back.
Thank you. Tim Finnegan lived in Walking Street, a gentleman Irish mighty odd. He had a brown boat, rich and sweet, and to rise in the world he carried a hod. But Tim had a bit of a timorous way. Well, I love the liquor he was born, and to send him on his way each day, he'd drop with a crater every morn. Back to the now, when you dance to your partner around the floor with your trotters shake. Isn't it the truth? I tell you, lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake. Now, one morning, Tim was rather full. His head felt heavy, which made him shake. He fell off the ladder and he broke his skull. Then they carried him home, his corpse to wake. Oh, they wrapped him up in a nice clean sheet. They laid him out upon the bed with a bottle of whiskey at his feet and a bottle of porter at his head. Whack! Pull it down with your legs to your partner around the floor with your trotter's shake. Isn't it the truth? I tell you, lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake. And his friends assembled at the wake, and Mrs. Finnegan called for lunch. Well, first she brought them tea and cake, then pipes, tobacco, and brandy punch. Then the widow Malone began to cry. Ah, such a lovely corpse did you ever see? Must it him aboard, and why did you die? Will you howl your gobs as Molly McGee? Whack, pull it down, will you dance to your partners around the floor, you cutter's shake? Isn't it the truth, I tell you, lots of fun at Finnegan Wake? Oh, well, Mary Murphy took up the job. Ah, Biddy, she, you're wrong, I'm sure. Well, Biddy fetched her a belt and a gob, and left her sprawling on the floor. A civil war did then engage. 'Twas woman to woman and man to man. Shillelagh law was all the rage, and a row and a ruction it soon began. Whack, pull it out, will you dance to your partner around the floor with your trotter's shake? Isn't it the truth, I tell you, lots of fun at Finnegan Wake? Oh, Tim Maloney ducked his head when a bottle of whiskey flew at him. He ducked and landing on the bed, the whiskey scatters over Tim. I'll be daddy revives and see how he rises. Tim Finnegan rising in the bed, saying, twiddle your whiskey around like blazes. Be the turnit and jazzy, do you think I'm dead? Whack, pull it out, you dance to your partners around the floor, you just can't escape. Isn't it the truth, I tell you, lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake. How would you know one?
Game ball!
Okay. Kathy Diane Fox Schaffner, 72, of Ringgold, went home to be with the Lord on May 15th in the comfort of her home. A funeral service was held at 10 a.m. on Thursday, May 19th, today, in the Fort Oglethorpe Chapel of Wilson Funeral Home with Reverend Tim Owens officiating. Arrangements by W.L. Wilson and Sons Funeral Home, Fort Oglethorpe.
Larry Gerald Woody, 78, passed away on Sunday, May 15th. There will be no services per his request. Arrangements by Heritage Funeral Home and Crematory, Battlefield Parkway.
John Sparks, age 86, of Ringgold, went home to meet with the Lord on Friday. Funeral services were held at noon on Monday at the Union Avenue Baptist Church with ministers James Dobson, Larry Dotson, Larry Underwood, Randy Bivens, Luke Kamlick, and Bobby Hilly officiating. A tournament was at 2 on Tuesday in the Lakewood Memorial Garden South in Rossville, and arrangements by W.L. Wilson and Sons Funeral Home in Fort Oglethorpe. And we take this time to acknowledge a recipient of a Medal of Honor. And today we read about Thomas Creek. Thomas Creek, U.S. Marine Corps, 3rd Battalion, 9th Marines, 3rd Marine Division. And the place that this event took place is Cam Lo, Republic of Vietnam, the 13th of February, 1969. For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty while serving as a rifleman with Company 1 in action against enemy forces. Lance Corporal Creek's squad was providing security for a convoy moving to resupply the Vandergrift command base when an enemy command detonated a mine, destroyed one of the vehicles and halted the convoy near the Cam Lo resettlement village. Almost immediately, the Marines came under a heavy volume of hostile mortar fire, followed by intense small arms fire from a well-concealed enemy force. As his squad deployed to engage the enemy, Lance Corporal Creek quickly moved to a fighting position and aggressively engaged in the firefight, observing a position from which he could more effectively deliver fire against the hostile forces. He completely disregarded his own safety as he fearlessly dashed across the fire-swept terrain and was seriously wounded by enemy fire. At the same time, an enemy grenade was thrown into the gully where he had fallen, landing between him and several companions. Fully realizing the inevitable result of his action, Lance Corporal Creek rolled on the grenade and absorbed the full force of the explosion with his body, thereby saving the lives of 5 of his fellow Marines. As a result of his heroic action, his men were inspired to such aggressive action that the enemy was defeated and the convoy was able to continue its vital mission. Lance Corporal Creek's indomitable courage inspired the U.S. Marine Corps and the U.S. Navy service. He gallantly gave his life for his country.
And as our custom, we read from John 15:13. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Eternally happy are they who find themselves face to face with their Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, today, sitting at the right hand of God, the Father Almighty.
Peace be thine. Got the first talk. Oh, we got local news.
Oh,
first.
We got a little local here. Well, I say local. I mean, yeah, there's a little local. The headline is the swimming pools are open in both Ringgold and Fort Oglethorpe, and it tells you when they're open, how much it costs, and it's gone up. Seems to me like I remember you used to be able to go swimming in the pool for a buck. It's $5.
Wow.
$5 to get in the swimming pool. Anyway, there's an article in here by the school superintendent, or not by, well, it's about him, and they've interviewed him and asked him a bunch of questions. And it's kind of interesting. I mean, it's somewhat innocuous. I'm surprised. I mean, I'm surprised. I shouldn't be surprised that anybody from this paper wouldn't ask, are you still teaching critical race theory in the Coatoos County schools? Well, needless to say, that question was not asked.
Gee, can you imagine?
And, you know, it's like, what are the areas you want to focus on as superintendent, and what do you consider priorities in students' education and so on? And the answers to that are, they're fine. Anyway, it just goes on and talks about asking him questions. And we could talk about those, but I won't go there. But anyway, that is not mentioned. It's not mentioned in here. And there are lots of parents who are concerned about that. So, I mean, I think the paper is showing its wokeness here. Anyway, there's an article here about early voting through May the 24th. And the article says the first week of voting, there were 1,769 votes in Coatoos County.
The early voting ends tomorrow, doesn't it?
Yeah. No. We're talking about the first week.
Oh, okay.
Only the first week.
Okay.
And if you count absentee ballots, which is about another 400 to 500, it was a total of 2,187. So they had about 400 or 500 absentee ballots, which I wonder. I don't know. Anyway, but this is more than voted in 2018. Apparently, in 2018, the in-person votes in early voting was 369. And this time, it's 1,769. So it's, what, almost five times the number of people.
Six times.
Well, it says 4.7 times. Oh. Well, no, I'm because it's 1,769. That 2,187 is including absentee ballots. But anyway, so it's just saying that, you know, it just shows that the interest is dramatic.
Well, one of the things, people don't climb over glass to get to the polls to vote for the incumbent.
No, they don't.
No.
No, they don't. So it'll be interesting to see whether these people who walked in and did something, whether it changed before it got counted or not. So we'll find out, I guess. I say, well, maybe we won't find out. And then there's, of course, then you go to the governor's race, and it talks about Kemp and Perdue. And I didn't realize it, but there are five candidates running for governor in the Republican primary. So it sounds to me like with Perdue coming on, that the chances of Kemp getting over 50% of the vote is not very likely.
No, it'll probably go to,
and of course,
runoff.
Yeah,
that's
probably.
That's what I'm hearing, is that if it goes to a runoff, that's when Perdue will really get busy and let the issues be known.
Well, while you're talking about that, I was listening to the radio right before I came up here. As of Tuesday, there were 160% more people voted in the primary than in 2018.
In the general election or in the primary?
Primary last time.
160% greater. Yeah, people aren't going to, oh, I want to go vote for the governor. He's done such a great job. I want to vote for him.
No.
I'm going to get all my friends to go vote for him.
Well, the courthouse and the trout feeders will be out there supporting him.
Well, another interesting event happened Sunday. And Black Doug, I don't think you were there. I don't think anybody else in the room but engineer number two was there with me.
What is it?
Herschel Walker came to town.
You know, I heard that he was in Ringgold, because going down Alabama Highway, I saw like 40 of his signs. Was that Sunday or was that on Saturday?
Sunday. Well, Tory notified engineer number two about it, and guess what Tory did?
He didn't go.
He sat back in his chair and didn't go. He didn't go anywhere.
He didn't even tell me anything about it.
I mean, you know, and I'm thinking, what's going on here? I mean, call me to tell me something that you're not going to go to? I mean, why bother?
Well, because he wanted you to go there.
Anyway, I'm glad I went. I got to see Herschel live and in color.
A lot of people?
Quite a few. I guess there was 200, over 200. It was a crowd, you know.
Where was it at?
And it was behind the at. It was over there at, it was down Alabama Road. I'm trying to think. It was at the People's
Cross Creek.
Yeah.
Pavilion.
It was, I think the guy's name is People's that owns it. Anyway. It's a nice location to do that. You got plenty of parking. And one of my wife's class reunions was held there. And it's an ideal place for an event. It's in a pavilion. It's not in a building. It's a big covered concrete slab, you might say. And anyway, it's set up for just exactly what happened. But Herschel showed up, and Jeff Mullis introduced him, and guess what? Can you believe that all the politicians that were running for other things showed up?
Really?
All of them but you.
Well, I didn't know anything about it. Nobody told me.
I looked and looked, and I thought, well, he's here. I just haven't found him yet. Anyway, there were a lot of politicians there. You know how you could tell them?
How?
They're the ones that had on a coat. Everybody else was wearing short sleeve. Everybody else was wearing short sleeve shirts. But Herschel gave, I'm sure he's given the speech many, many times, but he talked about his growing up years. And
he gave his testimony.
Yeah, it sounded like being in a church and hearing someone give their testimony. It was very good. And, you know, Herschel's not pulling any punches. He said, I'm not perfect. And but he laid out his ideas, which were, I don't know, to me, he tracked right along with Marjorie Taylor Greene, pretty much. Anyway, Herschel was here and got to see everybody. I was a little surprised. There were a lot of young people, and I guess that these were Georgia fans, you know.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of young people who like Georgia football, of course, were there. So, and other people.
Yeah, Jeff Mullis, when he introduced him, he says, well, I'm going to block for Herschel.
So he can make a touchdown. Anyway, so that's a little bit about the governor's race and the Senate race. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know who is running against Herschel, but I think he's just gonna blow the thing wide open on the primary.
I don't think anybody could touch him.
I don't think it will. I only had one other thing, and it was in one of the other papers. And I think the reason I bring it up is what's going on. And it has a picture of the Vogtle nuclear plant. Does anybody remember about the Georgia Power Company trying to build?
Yeah.
The Vogtle nuclear plant. You know, this has been going on, it seems like, forever.
It's
15 years or longer.
More than that.
And they're still working on it.
Is this the one in South Georgia? Or is
it's in, let me see.
South of Statesboro?
No. It is, I'm trying to remember where it's located. It says in here, I just can't remember off the top of my head. But it's up here closer. I'll find it. But anyway, it's one of these plants that Georgia Power started off building it, and then it became so costly that they doled out the ownership to other utility companies. So MEAG, Municipal Electric Authority of Georgia, owns a piece of it. Oglethorpe Power owns a piece of it. Even Dalton Utilities, if you can believe that.
Wow.
Of course, theirs is a real small piece, but they own a real small piece of it. But you don't hear, and the article doesn't mention it, but you don't hear people trying to climb over all these Save the Planet people trying to climb over the fence to block the construction going on at Plant Vogtle now. How far along is it? Does it say?
Oh, it's all but built. They've built several of the units, and this is unit number three, I think. No, three and four that they're trying to finish. But Westinghouse, I think it was, had it and went bankrupt. And so then they had to divvy out and get other people involved. So anyway, I thought it was kind of interesting that...
How much over budget is it?
Oh, billions.
Oh, yeah.
Billions. This thing is, I think it's $30 billion, just over budget. We're talking about over budget, $30 billion. So, I mean, it's it's out there. It's almost as much money as we're giving Ukraine, which, I mean, that's a lot of money.
It is.
So, anyway, I thought it was interesting that you do not hear the clamor by the idiots, the Greenpeace and whoever else, that how terrible nuclear power is.
Yeah.
Because it does not, you know, there's no puff of smoke going up when they generate. I mean, it's just blue skies. Hmm. Anyway, so let's see. That's what I had for local. Anybody else got?
Well, what about the other local races? Does anybody know anything about what's going on there? Well, I'm wondering, if Black Dog, have you got any polling information for the local races?
Well, I actually interviewed Colton Moore today, and he is down by two, according to the polling.
Okay. So, I mean, they can't. That's a statistical tie. You
is.
Can't be down by two and know who's ahead, really.
No. You know what? All those polls, because you remember back in 2016, even on Election Day, all the polls had Hillary Clinton winning by double digits.
Yeah.
And apparently
yeah.
the only people who didn't pay attention to the polls were the voters. So I don't have any faith in the polls.
So, but apparently it sounds like maybe it's close.
Yeah, I'm sure it's very close. So it's going to be interesting.
So I heard a poll. What do you've got the left and the right. What do you undecided? Yeah, the undecided. I heard a poll talking about the undecided, and they polled them regarding Biden, and they said it was 5% positive, and they said that's close enough to be zero.
Well, I started to say undecided. I think if you started polling the undecided, all four of them would be easy to poll.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you've got your 20% that are undecided, because 40% vote Democrat, 40% vote Republican. And
there's no way there's that many undecided. That's impossible.
All you have to do is go to the grocery store.
No,
the gas
station. I can't believe there are any undecided anywhere.
There's a lot of low information voters who they don't pay attention to what's
they
going on.
You don't get that low.
It's true.
If you're low information and you drive in your car to the filling station, you just became informed.
No, because there's a lot of low information voters who all they do, they get their news about 2 weeks before the election, and they listen to the headlines and they listen to the sound bites. That's all they know.
But if they're going to the grocery store and the gas station, they know.
I tell you what, I went to.
They may not know anything else, but they know that.
Exactly. I went to the grocery store yesterday, and we had not been in a few days, so we needed to get a few things. $233 before I could get out of
there. Well, I know.
But you carried it out in one hand.
I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it.
But just stop and think that there's still 30% of the people out there who approve of the job Biden is doing.
I don't believe it.
I don't either.
Well, even if it's 20%, that's still 20% of people who just have no common sense.
You know,
but they don't believe him.
You're talking about getting off of the local, but the news is pointing out that Walmart, they say when you go into Walmart, that store has been programmed by hundreds of people so that every single thing in that store, everything that's exposed, has been thought about and covered by hundreds of people, and it's right where they want it to be. They said that Walmart realizes that the economy is down. People have quit buying gallon milk. They go in and buy half gallon milk because they can't afford a gallon milk.
Yeah.
and they've noticed it with their stores, and so they're saying there's a problem.
Well, not only that, the think about it this way: we can't get baby formula for parents who have got small children, babies, but we can give 400 billion or 40 billion to Ukraine. I mean, and where's the logic?
Well, let's not forget that one Republican congresswoman from Florida who went to the border, I think it was last week, and she took pictures of pallets upon pallets of
two
baby
warehouse
formula. Yeah, for the illegals coming across. And the Democrats in Washington, they're defending that, saying, well, you know, their kids have to eat. And, you know, who cares about America? Because this administration, it's America less. But
anyway, we took a giant leap off of
yeah, global. But while you're talking about the formula, last week we talked about it a little bit, and we mentioned that, you know, years ago people didn't need that formula. But you got a different situation now. You've got both the husband and the wife having to work to support the family. So if you've got a small child, the mother can't be there. You got to have formula to feed the child while she's at work. So,
well, you know, talking about Walmart, did you hear their stock really tanked yesterday? I think it went down, what, 26% or something? So
Target, too. Yeah, Target did, too.
Couldn't happen to two better companies. And Netflix. Netflix is everything.
Wow.
I think it's time for a tune.
I started to say we might ought to do a tune, take a break.
Do you want
to? Flathead?
Oh, yeah. After a preacher died and went to heaven, he noticed that a New York cab driver had been given a higher place than he. I don't understand, he complained to St. Peter. I devoted my entire life to my congregation. Our policy is to reward results, explained St. Peter. Now, what happened, Reverend, whenever you gave a sermon, the minister admitted that some in the congregation fell asleep. Exactly, said St. Peter. And when people rode in this man's cab, they not only stayed awake, they prayed.
Oh, the lambs were playing in the fields and the tulips were in flower. When I left the home I loved so well, oh, I'll never forget the hour. Before me was the Atlantic wave to a home in Tennessee. And I left behind the girl I love, she's the Rose of Castlereagh. She may not have been a beauty queen, she may never be a rose. But to me she is the fairest flower that in the garden grows. And although I'm in America, across the Atlantic sea, sure I'll always love my Roscommon girl, she's the Rose of Castlereagh. Way up in the north in old Tyrone, there's a pretty little girl I call my own. She's the sweetest rose that Ireland's ever grown. And as sure as the moon and stars above, I've fallen head over heels in love with the pretty little girl from Oma in the county of Tyrone. She wears my ring and tells her friends she's going to marry me. But best of all, she tells them all she's happy as can be. Oh, lucky me. But I don't know what she's done to me. There's nothing else my eyes can see but the pretty little girl from Oma in the county of Tyrone. Take me back where the grass grows the greenest, to a little emerald garden in the sea. Take me back where the girls are the prettiest in the world, and it lies in the heart of me. People ask me where I come from back in Ireland, Dungannon, Connemara, or Tralee. Dublin, Derry, Donegal, did a lot of living in them all, and I tell them they mean all the world to me. Take me back where the grass grows the greenest, to a little emerald garden in the sea. Take me back where the girls are the prettiest in the world, and it lies in the heart of me. The little boats are gone from the breast of Annalifi.
ferrymen are stranded on the quay. Sure, the Dublin docks are dying, and a way of life is gone. And Molly, it was part of you and me.
Where the strawberry beds sweep down to the Liffey, you'll kiss away the worries from my brow. I love you well today, and I'll love you more tomorrow. If you ever love me, Molly, love me now.
It was the only job I knew. It was hard but never lonely. The Liffey ferry made a man of me. Now it's gone without a whisper, I've forgotten even now. And it's over, Molly, over Kansas Sea.
Where the strawberry beds sweep down to the Liffey, you'll kiss away the worries from my brow. I love you well today, and I'll love you more tomorrow. If you ever love me, Molly, love me now. If you ever love me, Molly, love me now.
Okay, next topic.
Well, I guess we could talk about the stock market going down and the talk of recession coming in.
Well, I'll tell you what I've been doing. I have been trying to, it's like a, what would you call it? It's like a bad memory. It's like put it out of your mind. Don't even think about it. Because if you do, all you do is get depressed.
It's hard not to think about when you're looking at everything that you've saved suddenly getting wiped away, and all the people whose 401ks and retirement funds are all, they're watching all of those vanish away.
I went and talked to my advisor and pulled the plug today. It has been, the electricity is no longer connected. I have pulled the plug. So, I can sleep better.
Well, you know, they're saying that gas prices are going to keep going up. And in Washington, they are resetting the gas pumps for $10 a gallon and higher.
Is that Washington, D.C. or Washington State?
Washington State.
Yeah. Well, what is it in California? It's already up, what, $5, $6, something like that?
It's over $6.
Yeah. And they're saying gas is going to keep going up. And then, of course, Biden, because he's so concerned about us, he stops drilling in Alaska, and he put a pause on all drilling in the country. So and he's begging Venezuela for oil now.
It's just ludicrous.
It is. But this is all being done by design because, you know.
Yeah, well, I don't think that the Biden and his crew of liberal advisors care if every American family goes totally bankrupt.
No, they don't care as long
as they can push forward their agenda of this wokeness and save the planet. They don't care. They don't care what happens to people.
Well, you remember the quote that Lenin gave, you know, before the Russian Revolution, when he said, "More pain, the better." Because the more pain you inflict on the people, the greater the chance of a revolution happening. And you've got all of these kids, all these millennials who are living in their mom's basement, drinking their $10 Starbucks, surfing on their iPhones. They've never been taught history. They don't know anything about history.
Well, have you heard what's going on in Sri Lanka? Now, if I'm not mistaken, isn't Sri Lanka an island off the coast of India?
Yeah.
It's its own country.
Yeah.
Well, the entire island they really don't make anything that they sell anybody. They don't have anything to really export, and so their main product was tourism. And so people came there, and they would spend their dollars or pounds or whatever over there, and they've got that currency, which is worth something. Their own currency kept going down in value. Well, the people that were running the show over there decided that they were paying, some of the poor people were really being hurt, so they just eliminated their tax requirement. It's about 25% of the population just eliminated the taxes. Well, then, of course, what happened is the income coming into the government went down, down, down. Anyway, to make a long story short, day before yesterday, they ran totally out of oil. No oil in the country, period. There was an oil tanker sitting at the dock, but they couldn't afford to pay the captain for the oil because he didn't have any money to pay him with. Their currency was devalued, so they couldn't afford to buy the, and so they started rioting. And then they started running out of food. They also, another wise thing they did was to save the planet. They said, we're not going to allow any chemical fertilizer. No more chemical fertilizer. Well, their food production for just internal use dropped by, 30% or something. So they started running out of food. So then they, here they, no gasoline, and then no food. They started rioting, and they actually killed the prime minister. They got him into a riot, and they killed him, and I don't know who else. But, that's an example of what happens when things really go bad.
You know, all it takes is people run out of food and they run out of energy. Did you hear that they are saying that this summer, all across the country, there's a shortage of energy, and they're telling people get ready for blackouts and brownouts because we don't have the energy to keep the energy plants going. And the, I guess, 40,
you're talking about here in the U.S.
Yeah, and 42% of the energy we get is from wind turbines. But you can't store energy.
No, that's not true.
Yeah, that's
no,
what I
No, I can guarantee you 100% that is not true.
Wow.
I spent a career working in the utility industry, and I would be shocked if more than 5%, maybe 6% of our energy comes from both solar panels and windmills.
Well,
that's all.
I'm just saying.
If you just go,
if
you'll get in your vehicle and go down to the load center at TVA and walk in there and look, it'll show you what you're saying is an impossibility. Now, there are idiots out there that really do believe that that could happen, but it ain't going to happen.
Well, there are brownouts. They're predicting brownouts this summer and blackouts because there's not enough energy and we don't have enough oil in this country. Well, we've got the oil, but we're just not drilling for it.
What's happened is, give you an example. I mean, all the utilities have a balance of coal burning plants, oil fired plants, and then nuclear plants. I mean, that's the balance. And then they try and placate the save the planet people by, buying people who will generate power from windmills and solar, and that's what 3-4% at the most. So, and I left out hydroelectric. TVA is unusual in that it has 10%, actually over 10% of its generation comes from hydroelectric power. So, and what's happened is that these utilities have been forced to get rid of their steam power plants, coal burning plants. And so now they're relying on, if they have hydro power, they've got that. And then they've got oil-fired plants, or gas-fired, oil-fired, both. I say oil, it's mainly gas, natural gas. And so those are basically the two things they're using, is nuclear and gas-fired plants. TVA being unusual in that it has hydroelectric power. Now, these other utilities have hydro power, but not to the same percentage that TVA does. So getting rid of this coal-fired thing is going to hurt us. And a lot of these plants that they shut down, maybe they'll crank some of them back up, because we've got plenty of coal.
We do have plenty of coal.
We've got plenty of coal.
But, the Green New Deal people, they don't want coal. They don't want natural gas.
Well, I remember, I probably said this before, I remember when I was in Blue Diamond Mining Company in eastern Kentucky at the Leatherwood Mine, and we were in the chief engineer's office talking to him about some work, and there was a dump truck out in the parking area. And when I got in my car, I looked over there, and it had this big decal on it, and it was green, and it showed this dump truck, and it was lifting its bed, and the flap was open, and these little gremlins were falling out the back. Huh. And it said, "Save coal, burn environmentalists." And I thought, well, now that was back in the late 70s that this was going on. So, anyway, like we need to crank up the coal plants and get them going until we can get our oil, they get the oil thing straightened. Because if the steam plants haven't been just totally shut down, they could take on this energy need that we've got right now.
They could, but that's if we had an administration that would actually cared about the American people.
Have you ever noticed the trains that come through Ringo? Have you ever noticed what kind they are?
Mm-mm.
About every, I don't want to quote it because I'll probably be wrong, but at least one unit train goes through Ringo every day. You know what a unit train is? It's 100 cars filled with coal, and it's headed south to Georgia Power to a steam plant somewhere. So every day there is a unit train full of coal going to a steam plant in Georgia to generate power.
So what happens when they the wackos are able to shut down that plant?
Well, I would say right now they're going to have a hard time with the energy needs that we got right now. They're not going to have any trouble. They're going to keep it going. But anyway, you know, all these people that thought nuclear power was terrible and it's awful, and now you don't hear the environmental nuts and Save the Earth people complaining about nuclear power.
It's the safest energy out there.
Yeah.
Of course, now, if you go to Russia and you've seen did y'all see any of the things that went on during this battle in Ukraine with the
Chernobyl?
Chernobyl?
Oh, yeah.
Did y'all see any of that?
Yeah.
Now, what, you know, do you want to describe what happened?
The people, the Russians went in there and then they got scared.
Well,
ended up.
Well, it's even worse than that. They did not tell the soldiers that Chernobyl was a problem. They just come trucking in. And see, Ukraine had, it's like a 30-kilometer circle around that plant. It's like you took a police cordon and put around it and said, "You don't go in this area because it'll kill you."
Yeah.
They never told the soldiers.
And they never told them nothing. And they had tanks coming in there, parking right next to the plant. They actually had a unit of soldiers digging a trench right near the plant, you know, like a defensive trench, so that they could get in the trench with their weapons and, you know, hold off any advance by the Ukrainians. Well, what happened while they were digging these trenches, these guys started just falling over.
Yeah.
They falling over, and I'm sure that it killed a bunch of them, and a lot of them are in the hospital right now, and who knows, they may never recover. So the Russians went plowing through, and some of these tanks these guys were in that were right up next to them, they said those tanks are contaminated. They need to be taken somewhere and parked for 1,000 years to let them. Anyway, so the Russians, I mean, you talking about idiotic. I mean, and it's a shame for these poor guys who were told that they were going on, what do they call it, special operation, is that what they call it?
Yeah.
They were supposed to, half of them didn't even know they were in another country. They thought they were still in Russia.
Well, if they survive, they'll glow at night.
Yeah,
so
right.
People will be able to find them.
Anyway, it was awful. It was terrible that you'd put, I don't know. I saw a clip this afternoon on the Russian-Ukraine war where it showed this guy going down the road. There was a reporter riding with him, and he was talking about this armored personnel carrier, like a real small tank, and they were talking about it. He said, "Oh, by the way,
and the Ukrainians were driving it, and he said, this is a Russian tank. They captured it.
Yeah.
And then they took it to their maintenance shop, fixed up all the problems, and they were taking it to the range to test it to make sure it was calibrated right.
Well, you know where all the equipment and parts for the Russian army material are made? They're made in Ukraine.
Ukraine, yeah.
Well, you know, the one thing I'm curious about, though, talking about the Ukraine, because we had Pelosi and we've had all these other politicians go out to the Ukraine, out to Kyiv, and meeting with the president, and they're all out there. I mean, it doesn't look like they're under a heavy fire, and it doesn't look like there's a war zone going on there. So I'm just curious exactly how much of a battle is actually going on in Kyiv, because nobody seems to be concerned about it.
Yeah.
It was interesting. The warfare has changed. This same video clip I was looking at, it was a Ukrainian firebase, and they had a artillery piece that was firing at the Russians, and then there was a little hut right next to it, and they had a guy in there with a computer, and they had a drone up in the air, and he was watching where the rounds were hitting, and he'd come running out and tell a guy what to adjust, and he would adjust it, and it showed around. A guy was driving a vehicle, and, I mean, this round hit that vehicle dead on. I mean, it obliterated it.
Well, you know who the number one supplier of Ukrainian heavy equipment is?
Who?
The Russian army. They've captured more Russian equipment that is now being used by Ukrainian army than anybody. So nobody has given them as much equipment as the Russians did when they captured them, or when they overrun their positions or whatever. Or maybe they just got out of their vehicle and just started running. I think that's probably most of it. I mean, these things, you know, they used to call the Sherman tank in World War II, they called it coffins, because the German actually had a better tank. And the problem was the U.S. just made so many Shermans that, you know, if one got damaged, you know, just push it off to the side and just get another one. The Germans couldn't do that. They couldn't produce that many tanks. So it wasn't that the Sherman was just a lot better tank. It was just that there were just so many of them.
All right, Flathead, take us to a break.
Two guys, Jimmy and Johnny, were standing in Heaven's Gate waiting to be interviewed by St. Peter. Jimmy, how did you get here? Johnny, hypothermia. And you, Jimmy, won't believe it. I was sure my wife was cheating on me, so I came home early one day hoping to find the guy. I accused my wife of unfaithfulness and searched the whole house without any luck. Then I felt so bad about the whole thing, I had a massive heart attack. Johnny, old man, if you had just checked the walk-in freezer, we'd both be alive.
That's bad.
Oh, the lambs were playing in the fields and the tulips.
In 1841.
The Garden of Eden has vanished, they say, but I know the lie of it still. Just turn to the left at the Bridge of Finney and stop when halfway to Coot Hill. 'Tis there fortune has come to my call. For the grass it is green around Ballyjane's Duff, and the blue sky is over it all. And tones that are tender, and tones that are gruff, My mother once told me that when I was born, the day that I first saw the light, I looked down the street on that very first morn and gave a great crow. Start with a sorrowful squall, but I knew I was born in Ballyjane's Duff, and that's why I smiled on them all. The baby's a man now, he's toil-worn and tough, still whispers come over the sea. Come back, Paddy Riley, to Ballyjane's Duff. Come home, Paddy Riley, to me.
All right, Tory's joining us, and I'm sure he's got something to caterwaul about.
Before you get into the churchman, I have got one thing I want to cover real quick. Can we do that?
Yeah.
You can do whatever you want to do.
Unless the engineer, Tory, not Tory, Reaver, says no. Because he controls the microphones and the board.
That's
okay.
True.
Go ahead.
Okay. This is real quick. This is an article published November the 14th, 2021, by Professor Paul Zak, the director of the Center of Neuroeconomics Studies at Claremont Graduate University. His research has made a substantial impact in explaining the variation in human social behaviors and has been cited by other scholars over 18,000 times, placing it in the top 0.3% of all scholars.
What are you talking about?
Well, I'm getting ready to tell you.
Well, that's what
and
we'd
his,
like
article,
to know.
His article, in quotes, it says, our results demonstrate that testosterone induces a red shift among weakly affiliated Democrats, which is the summary of the paper.
A red shift, meaning that they tend to move to the right.
In other words, the heading that I did not read.
Yeah,
is
so I can imagine.
Study, testosterone treatment turns Democrat voters more conservative.
Well, there we go. Can we put testosterone in the water?
I'm sure that amongst certain people, the word testosterone wouldn't be the choice of the words. They would pick out another word.
Yeah.
that came from a Revolver News.
Revolver News. Well, they were polite and kind in their description. Our religious advisor, Reverend Christopher Pierce, is also the editor of the English Churchman.
Is there any talk of him ever coming back to Ringgold to visit us?
You know, that's a good point. And then the other thing is, if he doesn't, why don't we hook up some kind of Skype so he can every once in a while jump in and correct us.
I think we did that once.
Yeah, we've got to
do it more than once.
Yeah, we've done it more than once.
We did it several times, but not Skype. We did it on the telephone.
And the telephone was not the best in the world, but I think that there's probably Zoom or something that we could do where the audio would be much, much better.
Work on that part with you.
Yes, that is one more thing on my list.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, his paper, The English Churchman, which has been around since the late 1700s, is a paper that is written
four Anglicans. But the English Churchman is a paper that sticks to a theological position known as Reformed. Now, we generally don't think in this country as Anglican or Episcopal as being Reformed. And I'll ask the folks that are here right now, can you define Reformed in a way that the audience can kind of get a grasp of? What do you mean by a Reformed church as opposed to Methodist, Baptist, Catholic, the list goes on, Pentecostal, et cetera, et cetera? Yeah.
Well, I'll try and take a stab at it.
It's not an easy thing to do.
Reformed would mean that those people who God has chosen to be saved and to receive salvation are predetermined, and that we as individuals in our own power can do nothing to cause ourselves to be saved. We can't be better. We can't force ourselves into salvation. We can't be more holy. So there's nothing we can do. We're powerless and dead in our sins, and it's only through God's grace and mercy that he calls us to himself to accept his son. So that is Reformed, where a lot of Protestant denominations believe that we have power ourselves over that decision, that we can decide that we're going to accept Jesus Christ ourselves, that God didn't have any part in it.
If he didn't have a part, we had a spark in us.
Yeah.
That got the thing started.
Right. And also that you, once you become, quote, saved or accept Christ, that because of your behavior afterwards, if it's not good, you can lose your salvation. Well, that is not Reformed. Reformed is that once he called you and you accept him as your Lord and Savior, there isn't anything you can do that will cause you to become unsaved. And, the Holy Spirit won't let it happen. So anyway, in my view, that's a short, real short definition of Reformed. It's and there are other aspects of it, but I'd say that's the main thing.
Anything else that you want to add? That pretty well covers it. But the notion is that you're walking down the road and you say, well, I've been thinking about religion, so I think I'm going to accept Christ and I'm going to be saved, therefore I'm going to be saved. And then when you get home, you're saved. And I've made that decision. Well, of course, the notion there is if you can make that decision to do that, then you can make the decision not to do it.
Yeah, and the Reformed view of that is that you may have done all that, but you didn't have anything to do with it. Really, God's the one that moved on your heart to cause you to come to that place where you wanted to do it.
So it's a question of who moves first, as somebody said. So anyway, the Episcopal Church, go ahead.
Well, I was going to make a comment that WAAK has a program every day, and what's his name that comes on right before a program?
Gerstner.
John Gerstner. And he explains in great detail, in a very simplified manner, what we're talking about.
And it is also pretty deep.
Yes.
It's not just, skimming the surface. It's not a Bill Clinton view of Christianity. You know, it's not on thin ice. I encourage people to.
And so what you're saying is that the Anglican Church is Reformed, is what you're saying.
Yeah, the Anglican Church Constitution
of the Anglican Church of Australia, the Anglican Church of America, the Anglican Church of Rhodesia, the Anglican Church of England. They're all Reformed in their paperwork, in their paperwork. But in practice, if you were to go into an Episcopal church somewhere in Chattanooga, you would hear a message, and what's the message besides Reformed? That is the general message where you do all of the work. There's the other view, and it's there's the Reformed view and the There's the Reformed view and the review and the view of most Baptist and the most Methodist and. See now, y'all, that word just left me.
It's not everybody. Everybody knows what you're talking about, but
it's
nobody.
It's not Pelagianism.
No. Oh gosh.
Well, we'll get to it because those people that know that are much quicker than us on the uptake that are driving in their cars that are listening to this right now are saying, "How stupid are these guys?"
Well, they're getting ready to talk about. I told you what Reformed was. At least I did that.
Yeah, you did a good job on Reformed. So I don't even know why I brought that up.
Armenian.
Yeah. That's it. So anyway, if you were to go into a Methodist church or a Baptist church, the view is that of an Armenian.
Well, now, I would agree with you on a lot of that, but now a lot of Baptist churches are Reformed.
Sure. Yes. Yeah,
so, I mean, it's not just, you know, one, what is it, all the same.
That's right. And, but you would also find a lot of people sitting in the pews that consider themselves Baptist will tell you that they've decided that to be Baptist, and they've decided to accept Christ, and they've decided that therefore they are saved.
So, because that's what the preacher told them.
Yeah, that's what the preacher told them, or what their next door neighbor told them, or some guy down the street, whatever. So anyway, so my point here is that the English Churchman is a Reformed newspaper in the Anglican community of people who get this paper, and that is a what's the word I'm looking for? That's a conflict, because most of the people in the Anglican Church don't consider themselves to be Reformed. They consider themselves to be the other. But that hasn't got anything to do with paperwork. You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, let's move on. We will get to... there's a reason that I brought that up, but I'm not going to delve into that right now. I'm going to delve into something that I thought was extremely interesting, and it deserves some real discussion because it's going on right here. Just because it's happening in the church in England doesn't mean that it's not happening here. Talking Jesus Research Results. A consortium of Christian ministries joined together to commission a poll amongst people in the UK, UK meaning United Kingdom, about their understanding of various topics related to the Christian faith. The ministries involved were Alpha, the Evangelical Alliance, Hope Together, Lewis Paula Association, and Kingsgate Community Church. Now, these names wouldn't mean a whole lot to us here, but they would mean a lot to the people in the Christian community in England. Kind of like what's Billy Graham's organization, Samaritan's Purse or whatever it is. They're that well known in England. The consortium hired Savanta Comres to conduct the polling. The polling took place between the 28th of January and the 13th of February of this year. There were about 4,000 adults polled, so that's pretty good sample. The margin of error is estimated to be 1.54%. And 48% of the United Kingdom's adult population self-identified as Christians. So when they were on the phone or in person, I don't know how they did it. I don't know if they knocked on doors and talked to people, whatever. They identified themselves as Christians. So the next largest categories were none of the above at 26%. So that means none of the above or 48% consider themselves to be Christians or none of the above. And atheist at 12%. 4% self-identified as agnostics, with an identical percentage identifying as Muslims.
What was the percentage on Muslims again?
With an identical percentage identifying as Muslims, that's 4%, which I thought it would have been higher.
Yeah.
2% were in the prefer not to say category. The report stated the first question that we asked was about the religious affiliation of the population.
Now, before you go any further, if my understanding is that the Anglican Church is the official church of the whole United Kingdom.
That's correct. It's the state church. It's the state-sponsored church, and the Queen is the head of the church.
And which means it's taxpayer-funded.
That's right. There's an article in here about that, about taxpayer funding of the church, too. It's real interesting. The report stated the first question that we asked was about the religious affiliation of the population. Something else I need to mention about that. While the church is funded by taxpayer money, a lot of the social work that is done by churches, that's done by the government here, is done by the church over there, which I think is an interesting approach.
In other words, the government funds the church. The church turns around, takes some of that funding, and does social work with
it. That's right. God forbid any of our money be distributed by Christians. That'd be a terrible thing. All right, so anyway, the report stated, the first question that we asked was about the religious affiliation of the population. We discovered that 48% of the population chose to describe themselves as Christians. This is down from 58% in 2015. That's only 7 years ago. The Christian faith is chosen by many more people in the older age brackets, 60% of those aged 55 to 64, going up to 63% of those 65 plus. That's a pretty strong number, 65 plus. In Great Britain, 63%. Whereas it is 29% of those aged 18 to 24. That really drops down. So that means that 70% do not identify themselves that are between the age 18 and 24 as Christians. So things are going to change in the United Kingdom. This is a significant drop in the number of people choosing to affiliate themselves with the Christian faith. While 48% of the population describe themselves as Christians, however, only 6% identified as practicing the Christian faith. Now think about that.
How much?
6%. Practicing Christians were those that went to worship at least once per month and were praying and reading the Bible at least weekly. I was much more of a Christian. I'm much more of a Christian than I thought I was. So anyway, this means that 94% of those ascribing to the Christian faith were not practicing. The polling showed that 20% of the UK population thinks that Jesus is God in human form and a real historical person. 25% understand Jesus to be a normal human. 33% see Jesus as a prophet or spiritual leader, but not as God. 18% don't know. Interestingly, 16% believe in the resurrection as told in the Bible. 29% believe in the resurrection, but the Bible has some content that should not be taken literally. Now, y'all have all been grown up in this area. What's your take on where we are compared to where the United Kingdom is?
We'll talk to a man from Chicago, the hub of the Bible Belt.
Oh, yeah.
Right in the midst of Skokie, Illinois.
Yes. It's a bellwether.
It's a bellwether of Christianity. What are the things that roll through your brain about what we're like versus what they're like?
Well, I think what the UK is like is probably closer to what it's like up in Illinois. I think down here that those numbers would be a lot higher.
Well, you know, they call this area the Bible Belt, and you know, if you go other parts of the country and you drive around, you'll see churches, but you won't see the density of churches that you see here. So I'm thinking that more people, I don't know what the percentages are, but more people probably go to church in, say, the greater Chattanooga area, Ringgold area, than a lot of other places in the country.
What about the idea of practicing Christians?
But now... there again, I mean, that's that if you talk about how many people go to church, would you say once a month?
Yeah.
There are lots and lots and lots of people who do not go to church.
Right.
Lots of people.
But that doesn't mean that they're not Christian.
I didn't say that.
No, but I'm just, but that's the survey.
Yeah, yeah. I'm and just saying, you're talking about practicing Christians. It's just, because if everybody went to church, we would have to have a lot more churches and a lot bigger buildings to get them all in there. So, you know, how we compare to other locations, all I know is just what I've observed, that I think that there are probably more people that go to church in this area than you would find in other places in the country.
Well, why is it that there's a lot of churches anymore that don't have Sunday night services? There's a lot of churches in Catoosa County that don't do that anymore.
I can remember Sunday night service.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't go but a couple of times. Well, really. But well, I knew we had.
Growing up, I went a lot of times.
Yeah.
I think it's that they're... I've been to Methodist, Baptist, and Presbyterian churches, and you know they all had Sunday night and Wednesday night. A lot of them.
Yeah, they used to. Yeah,
have Wednesday night.
Yeah,
and I think it's just all the distractions. I think that people are just distracted by so many things that, and even back when you had Sunday night service, for instance. You just had a fraction of who would come on Sunday morning.
That part's true.
Even though, and so the number was very small that would come on Sunday night, and on Wednesday night, then it's even less. So the church that I go to now, I mean, we have a Wednesday night. What would you call it? A church activities, and a lot of that has to do with youth. So parents bring their children. They have a meal, and you know, and
mm-hmm. is that and, a? They used to have a, what is it? A prayer,
Sunday night prayer. Wednesday night prayer service, yeah, and that's what happened. A lot of the young people, they have programs for the young people, and then the parents will have different things. They'll have prayer groups or study groups that they will go into. So, but Sunday night is just. I don't know why. I think that it just distractions.
If you heard John Gordon's interview on WAAK,
yes.
And John Gordon talked about him growing up and what it was like, and he went to Mulberry Methodist Church there in Macon. I've been there. Beautiful church. Huge.
Is that
church.
The one right next to Mercer? It's not the next one next to Mercer. It's bigger than that. It's a big church. Must be a big church.
Anyway, it's been 30 years since I went and visited. But anyway, you listen to his description, and his description was what you mentioned. He went Sunday, and then he went Sunday night, and then they had
on Sunday after church, they had dinner at the church. So they had Sunday church, and then they had dinner, and then they had Sunday night church, and then Wednesday had this whole big deal on Wednesday night. He's basically what he was describing was that the family activities for the whole week were centered around the church, of doing something having to do with the church. I think there's a lot of good about that.
Yeah. I just think there's so many distractions now for people, and that's what's caused a lot of this not attending on Sunday night. Because if you've already been once that day, you know, so. And then Wednesday night is focused mainly on the children, and then having things so that adults can participate as well. So that's still going on in a lot of churches because,
I remember growing up in Chicago, they didn't have Sunday night church, but they had Saturday night church.
That's
so they had Saturday night church, Sunday morning church, and then Wednesday night church.
Well, was it the same kind of service?
Yeah,
or it
was the synagogue Christian church. No, I'm just kidding.
Was it the same type of service? In other words, was Saturday, you go Saturday, and then you don't have to go Sunday, or is it a different service?
I don't know. I never went on Saturday night. I knew a lot of people who would go Saturday night. I wasn't one of them.
Okay.
Well, anyway, thanks, Jane. The church I go to has Sunday night. We have Wednesday night activities. And it's like you said, on Sunday night, not as many folks come. But, you know, I'd say 60% of the people that are on Sunday morning come Sunday night. And Wednesday is not near as many people there on Wednesday.
Well, here we go with another thing about our local culture. Our father didn't go to church. I never saw him go to church. Unless it was a funeral or a wedding. That's the only times I ever saw him go to church. But he always said grace at meals. He talked about Jesus. And y'all didn't do this, but when we would go horse trading, he would listen to gospel music on the radio. Just a lot of things you don't know. But I can remember him telling me, you know, he's talking, why don't you go to church? I remember asking him, why don't you go to church? Well, he said, well, Aunt Mabel's taking you all to church. Everything's fine. And he said, listen, I grew up going to church. My daddy was a deacon in the Baptist church. Every time those doors opened, I had to be there. I had to be there whether I wanted to be or not. He says, I know all about what goes on in that church. And he said, but the point is, he saw to it that we got exposure to the church, to Bible school, to Christian doctrine,
to the
Trinity, to the gospel, etc. And he and Mother both, they saw to it that happened, whether they went or didn't go.
Well, you know, I think this whole thing is traveling down the road like somebody traveling down the road going on a destination. You're talking about the young people, 18 to what? 18 to 26. I think
24.
When a lot of those end up with children, a lot of those are going to want their children in a church.
That's right.
And so if you interview them again
20 years from now.
Yeah, then those dynamics would change. So, you think about, you go back to the hippies and all that. I mean, a lot of these people that were hippies now are good Christians.
And very productive capitalists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I don't mean capitalists. You know, they're in the free enterprise system.
Things don't stay constant. But
And if you were to ask people in my generation that were between 18 and 24 that were attending college about whether or not they were Christians, there's an awful lot of social pressure in those centers of higher learning, which is really lower learning, to not profess your faith. So I'm just, I think these are interesting numbers, and I will add this, and I did want to add this, that when I asked Chris, who's the editor of this paper, I said, what do you think about where we are here in the Chattanooga Metro? He says, well, the Chattanooga area has some of the most active gospel-spreading nonprofit organizations in the world per capita. That there's so much money in Christian organizations.
One of those is McClellan, and there are others, but
He further said, he said, if you look at the history and demographics of Catoosa County, that it's probably more religious, Christian. I don't use the term religious. That's not good. Christian than even the Chattanooga area, Chattanooga Metro.
I'll tell you something that I heard this week that I did not know. Catoosa County has the highest per capita income of any county in the Chattanooga metropolitan area. That includes Hamilton, what's the one in Cleveland?
Bradley.
McMinn, just go around wherever.
Walker.
Walker, Dade, anywhere. Catoosa County has a higher per capita income.
Well, that's because we're smarter than them.
Well, I know. But you look at where we
came
from.
Absolutely.
Well, we've been...
We're on the radio. We must be smarter.
That's right. We're from Scotland. We have shorter legs.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, we have to sit down more.
Well, but you got to look at...
And we have to think.
You got to look at where we came from. You got to look at where we came from. We on the Historical Society have been working on the... our Historical Society... Museum at the Yellowstone Church, the GDOT has given us, quote, a final plan to review. It's an 89-page document on the upgrade of our museum, and it's supposed to tell the story of Catoosa County. And we've been going through it and marking out, no, that's not us, take that out. No, this doesn't work, that's not Catoosa County, you know. So, but when you look back, and we had the colonel, which we haven't talked about tonight, but the colonel was reviewing it. And basically, we went from the Civil War to totally burned out to subsistence farming to kind of where we are now. And the question came up in this discussion in the article that these guys at West Georgia wrote, about the Depression and how the Depression affected Catoosa County. And the colonel's comment was, well, it didn't affect Catoosa County that much because we were already in a Depression.
And had been in a Depression since
the War. Yeah. Now, we know specifically that that is not totally true because we know about our grandfather who lost his business.
That's right.
Because of the Depression.
Yeah.
And there are other people, I'm sure, that happened to. But in general, I think the colonel is probably right.
Yeah.
That and you think about, here we were from burned out to subsistence farming to maybe a little dairy farming and then to where we are today. And now we are a better per capita income, a higher per capita income than anybody in the metro area. It's amazing when you think about it.
Yeah.
It's got me thinking I might ought to move back up here. I'm down the edge of Walker County.
Yeah, there you go.
You're still
in the Depression back down there.
Yeah, you might end up making more money just making the move.
You know, I lowered the per capita income when I moved here, just so you know that.
Well, and, you know, people move here from, we've talked about this, people come in wanting to buy a house in this area, and they come down here from Chicago or up north somewhere, and, you know, they can buy a house for, what, a half or less than what they sold theirs for, and they can't believe it. And they can buy a bigger house, nicer house, have more property. And
have city water and electricity.
And everything.
I had a very good friend explain some of this stuff to me. I said, how come it was back in the old days we had a 50 Chevrolet, seven kids, and we could all get in the car? Now people's got to have minivans, trucks with campers. He said, well, Ray, think about it. We didn't have nothing to take with us, and we didn't leave nothing home, so we didn't need nothing to haul it in.
That's right.
And I think he was pretty well right.
That's right.
You know, the idea that people go on vacation, can y'all think about that?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody thinks annually they've got on vacation.
We never.
In my entire life, growing up at my home, we never, quote, went on vacation. That was not an issue. You didn't do that. Now, we did go visit our sister, which that was kind of like a vacation. But I remember we drove down there one day and got up at 4 o'clock, got down to Savannah by about, I don't know, around noon, and we had lunch and sat around for about an hour and a half or so, and Dad looked at his watch and said, well, it's time to leave. I got to get home and feed the horses.
That's right.
And so he turned around and drove home. Probably got home about 1 o'clock, 2
That's
o'clock.
Right. And he was up the next morning going to work.
Yeah.
It was a different world. I only remember one time as a family we went anywhere. It wasn't a yearly thing. So, yeah, it's definitely changed. Some people think they've got to have a vacation.
And a vacation. That means you're not happy where you are if you've got to have a vacation.
What I don't understand, all these people got a $300,000 house, and they want a $50,000 camper where they can go out on the lake and be miserable. I kind of like it at home better. I had a camper one time. I lost, I don't know, about $3,000. I stayed 3 nights miserable, so I sold it pretty quick.
You know, people want to, quote, get away.
Yeah.
What are you going to get away from, and where are you going to go to? I mean, you know, that makes sense.
I can understand some of that. Some people love the lakes and everything, and it's just not my fascination.
Well, it is nice to get out of Dodge every so often.
Well, I never lived in Dodge. I was raised in Ringo. Mood Rock Springs. I never did live in Dodge.
Is it time for a tune and a joke?
I think so.
I just told one.
Okay. Well, you can tell another.
I'll tell you this one. Travel agent, I can get you 3 days and 2 nights in Rome for $100. Customer, well, that's a wonderful deal. How come it's so cheap? The days are July 11, 12, and 13. The nights are July 21st, 27th, 23rd.
In 1841, me corduroy breeches I put on. Me corduroy breeches I put on to work upon the railway, the railway. I'm weary of the railway. Her Paddy works on the railway. In 1842, from Hartlepool I moved to Crewe, when I found myself with a job to do, working on the railway. I was wearing corduroy breeches, digging ditches, pulling switches, dodging hitches. I was working on the railway. In 1843, I broke me shovel across my knee, and I went to work for a company on the Leeds and Selby Railway. I was wearing corduroy breeches, digging ditches, pulling switches, dodging hitches. I was working on the railway. In 1844, I landed on the Liverpool shore. Well, me belly was empty, me throat was raw, with working on the railway, the railway. I'm weary of the railway, her Paddy works on the railway. In 1845, when Danny O'Connell, he was alive, when Danny O'Connell, he was alive and working on the railway. I was wearing corduroy breeches, digging ditches, pulling switches, dodging hitches. I was working on the railway.
In 1846, I changed me trade to carrying bricks. I changed me trade to carrying bricks from working on the railway. I was wearing corduroy breeches, digging ditches, pulling switches, dodging hitches. I was working on the railway. In 1847, Per Paddy was thinking of going to heaven. Per Paddy was thinking of going to heaven to work upon the railway, the railway. I'm weary of the railway. Per Paddy works on the railway. Well, I was wearing corduroy breeches, digging ditches, pulling switches, dodging hitches. I was working on the railway.
Paddy works on the railway. Poor Paddy.
Paddy.
We got about 15 minutes left here.
Have you got anything on your list that was
we did a few of them.
Well, wait a minute. There's one thing we haven't talked about in general.
What's that?
There were elections in North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Idaho,
Oregon.
Yeah, Oregon.
And Kentucky.
In Kentucky. And
you want to know the record? Do you know what
Well, I was going to say in general, and maybe you ought to give it because I was just going to do it off the top of my head. What have you got there?
Liz Harrington, who is Trump's communications director, gave this out. And this was early in the week. Trump is 82-2. He has endorsed 84 candidates, and 82 of them have won and only lost two.
Well, they were talking about, and you probably saw it on War Room, they were talking about that the Republicans are 8 ahead in any, in general. Go to any state, any election, that the Republicans are
8 points
ahead. 8 points ahead, and typically they would be 2 points behind. So what that is, that's a 10-point overall a change.
And if things work out as normal, then that means if they were 2 points behind, if they were to win, they'd have to move up another 2 or 4 points. So they could end up by Election Day being 10 points ahead.
Oh, yeah.
In other words, when the battle really starts, when the issues converge on Election Day.
Well, Mastriano in Pennsylvania running for governor in the primary, he won by 46 points.
Well, I thought he won 41% of the vote.
That's what I mean. He was 41% ahead of anybody.
Well, he was 41. He won 41% of the vote with two other candidates running.
Right, that's what I'm
saying. But he ran away with that.
And there was one in North Carolina that they called him the winner in less than 6 minutes.
Yeah.
After the polls closed, in less than 6 minutes, they called him the winner.
Well, it's interesting to see how this is working out. In Pennsylvania, the Republican voters that went to the polls and voted Republican were like 500,000 more than voted in the last Republican primary. Now, think about that. You think about how everybody wanted to go vote in the last Republican primary. I mean, everybody wanted to go. People just didn't stay home. Well, now you've got a ton of people in addition to that going to vote. Engineer number two saying they're climbing over glass to get to the polls to vote.
And what War Room Bannon keeps saying is that what he wants to see happen is that there would no longer be a Democratic Party. So when I don't know what happens when you don't have a two-party system. In other words, they get beat so bad you've got the quote MAGA Party, GOP. You got the MAGA Party. That's and then what do? You split Congress up. You have independents, and then you have a handful of Democrats, and then you have the Greenpeace Party.
Well, what happens
normally in a situation like that is the single party develops factions.
I'm wondering, because this happened when the Whigs went out of business and won one election.
Yeah, well, but now here's another.
Actually, way. Two.
Here's two. I mean, I understand what you're saying there, but it looks to me like if you look at the population centers around our big cities, the urban areas, I mean, that unless the black population all of a sudden decides they want to become Republican, then there's going to be a lot of
Democrats.
A lot of Democrats still.
Well, yeah, that's true. But they're predicting that almost 25% of the black population is going to vote Republican this time.
Well,
they're
saying so. That was one thing Herschel was talking about.
Yeah.
Marjorie Taylor Greene is accused of being a racist.
Yeah.
And y'all went to see the other racist candidate Sunday. His name was Herschel Walker.
Yeah, he made another comment about
two,
they called
two
me
racist candidates here in Catoosa County. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Herschel Walker.
Yeah. Anyway.
What were you going to say? The comment he made? What did he make?
Well, he made some comment. They called me a racist, but, I mean, everybody just laughed. I mean, you look at him and call him a racist? This is crazy. Anyway. But this whole thing about what happened here this week. Now, what will be interesting is what's going to happen Tuesday. And Tuesday, it's not just Georgia. There's a lot of other states that I think, am I right, that are having their elections also.
I just know about Georgia.
And so everybody's got their eyeballs on Georgia, though. They want to see what's going to happen.
Yeah. I heard one of the people I played golf with today, he said, Trump shouldn't be doing what he's doing. He shouldn't be picking out people. He said, let them figure it out for themselves. He's ruining the Republican Party.
Yeah, good. That's exactly what needs to happen.
Yeah. Well, I kept my mouth shut.
Well, I tell you what, Tory, it's like I'll never forget it. I was in a meeting with Carolina Power and Light Company, and the guy was telling a story. And he was saying that they were in a meeting with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And they got in the meeting and they were having problems because of what the lawyers were doing. And the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission guy said, well, look, next time we have a meeting, let's don't have so many lawyers. And he said he had a notepad and he wrote on it, next time bring more attorneys to the meeting. But I got a question for Tory.
All right.
Have you been following what's happening with the case of Sussman and what's the FBI guy or the Justice Department?
No, I haven't, and I wish that I had, but I have not paid any attention to it.
What's the guy doing the investigation, the Justice?
Durham.
Durham, yeah, Durham.
The prosecutor.
Man, they have got this guy. They're ready to – this attorney Sussman. They're almost ready. They've got the strings already tied around his thumbs, and they're about to string him up over the rafters.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they've got this guy dead to rights. The problem is that the jury, the people on the jury, they've got...
it's Washington, D.C.
I know it's Washington, D.C., and so they've got people that all wanted to vote for Hillary, or all did vote for Hillary, and they've got... They just yesterday or today, they had to kick one of the Durham made him kick one of the jurors off because the daughter of one of the
jurors
was good friends with I forget who it was. It was somebody. It's a prejudice without beyond a doubt.
Yeah,
and so they kicked that juror off.
But the thing of it is, they're
saying that no matter what kind of evidence they bring forward, this jury is likely just to, they don't care. They're not going to come up with a verdict.
I'm wondering, it before they send the jury out, can the prosecutor in any way, shape, or form ask for a change of venue?
Well, he could have asked for a change of venue from the beginning. My question is, why... is it being tried in Washington, D.C. to begin with?
Well, the defense attorney yesterday or today asked the judge for a mistrial. And the judge said, and that's no way that's happening.
Well, now, they made the comment that there was how terrible it was because the jury pool they had to pick from, they were not going to come up with anything guilty.
Right.
But apparently there is another trial in Virginia that's on the same subject matter, the same thing. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but it's going to be in Virginia. So in that case, the jury pool will be different.
Well, in other words, this one in Virginia, would it be against the same guy?
I think so. I just remember they were saying there's going to be another trial in Virginia over the same issues, and so they'll get a different jury pool to work from. But, I mean, it's like, how are you going to get a fair assessment by the jury if there's only one, they're all slanted in one direction. Seems to me like, Tori, that Durham could have just asked for a change of venue. I want to have this trial in Kansas somewhere.
Well, they are limited in that there is where the crime occurred. You have the right to be tried where the state has jurisdiction to try a crime where the crime occurred. You commit murder in Catoosa County. If you're a resident of Texas, you still have to come to Catoosa County to be tried for murder. However, if the jury or if is prejudice against the defendant, then the defendant can ask for a mistrial. I mean, ask for a change of venue. I've never heard of the state being able to ask for a change of venue because the state is prejudiced against itself.
Yeah.
That's what it amounts to, is they are prejudiced against their own laws.
Well, here's an interesting story. Reaver, you'll have to correct me because you've heard some of this, and I know we got to go. But it had to do with this whole story about Sussman going to the FBI, and he says, I'm just coming on my own, and I want to help the FBI out. Well, it just so happens, what would happen if you walked into the FBI headquarters and I want to see the chief counsel of the FBI? What do you think would happen?
Well, if I tried that,
You might get the receptionist.
I might get the receptionist. They might make an appointment for me to meet with an investigator.
But you'd never walk in the door.
You'd have to work your way up the food chain.
You'd never get immediately walk out of your car and walk into the chief counsel of the Justice Department. So that's what he did, and he's supposedly knew him pretty well. So, you know, they're saying that, well, the defense is just saying, well, I was just giving help to the FBI. And so, anyway, and they proved it was all
a frame-up.
And the FBI supposedly knew that it was a frame-up before he ever walked in the door.
And yet,
even knowing that, and they are going to admit it in court, they turned around and continued to investigate Trump, knowing that the allegations were all made up.
And appointed a special counsel.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows that the Justice Department was a bunch of snakes in the grass. And they were being used as a political a tool for the in a political campaign.
We didn't realize how fortunate we were to have Herbert Hoover, the homosexual director of the FBI for 50 years.
Who had dirt on everybody.
He had dirt on everybody. There wasn't any of this business of them going to Herbert Hoover and asking him to use the FBI as a political tool against anybody else, because if they showed up at his office, he would pull out their dossier and say, now, what kind of sins is it that you're saying this other person has committed? And as much as I dislike that whole notion, you know, the king always has his court. King David had his court. He had his police officers. We think about justice as being blind. We think about how things ought to be. They never have been that way. And occasionally justice somehow works its way out.
Well, I think the Justice Department is going to, and the FBI are going to end up looking like the swamp big time.
I mean, we really and truly, if the right thing was done, the FBI would be done away with.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need an FBI.
Yeah.
We have enough police force in all the cities to with any kind of a problem.
And there's probably should be a Secret Service to deal with money and protect the president, that kind of thing. But that's about all the federal government needs in the way of a police force. But, you know, that ship has probably sailed. So anyway, there's lots of other stuff we could be talking about. Have you got anything else on your list?
Well, I do, but we don't have the time, so.
Now, who said we don't have the time? I've got till midnight.
I know one of the things on his list, and he's right, we don't have time to get into it, but you're talking about the deep state and this Department of Homeland Security disinformation governance board that disbanded. I've got the article here. The bottom line, the reason that woman had to resign or be fired or whatever was that they caught her doing disinformation against another country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where they impacted somebody that another country was trying to do anyway. It just goes to show that the deep state is the deep state.
But CNN has to be very happy because the disinformation board did not last as long as CNN Plus.
So that's true.
CNN's got to be very happy about that something.
So
did
they
not
won.
Last.
They won that race.
They did. The disinformation board they disbanded because of disinformation. So go figure.
All right. What the Bible says under the topic Christian, 1 Peter 4:16. Yet, if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in that name.
Ephesians 4:26. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger.
Romans 14:1. As for the one who is weak in faith, welcome him, but not to quarrel over opinions.
Acts 11:26. And when he had found him, he brought him to Antioch. For a whole year they met with the church and taught a great many people. And in Antioch, the disciples were first called Christians.
James 4:1. What causes quarrels and what causes the fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you?
Matthew 6:24. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. And before we leave, I wanted to mention the colonel isn't here because he was in a home accident.
Oh.
And you're aware of that, aren't you, Tori?
I understand that he had some broken ribs.
Yeah, and I don't know how much that he wants everybody to know, but he was out working and basically fell. And so anyway, he's been injured, but he's recovering, and I talked to him yesterday. He's doing a little bit better, and so hopefully he'll be doing enough better that he can be here next time.
So say a few prayers for the colonel.
That's right.
All right, and as we always do at the end of each show, we read from 2 Chronicles 7:14. If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray, and seek my face, and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, and will forgive their sin, and will heal their land.
Be safe, be good, shop Ringo, read your Bible every day, and pray for our country. It needs help.